our export grows strong, that helps our GDP. That probably will be the highest of the world this year.
The country he's talking about most likely will surprise you. This is Thursday, the 24th of December, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. president hints he might veto help for pandemic victims. Australia to ease COVID restrictions for the holidays. $1.3 million bail set for Hong Kong media tycoon Jimmy Lai. And we answer the question, why do Jewish people go to Chinese restaurants on Christmas? That and more on today's VOA Asia. As the world's economies reel from the coronavirus pandemic, Taiwan is on track to end the year clocking up enviable growth, a testament to that island's success in halting the deadly disease. Throughout much of the year, shoppers have thronged stores, restaurants have stayed busy, tourist attractions have remained open, and factories have kept humming. In a remarkable contrast to comparable industrialized economies which have taken a battering, official projections forecast growth of 2.5% in 2020. Lin Shu-Chia is an economist at the National Tsinghua University.
The major reason that we have a very good economic growth performance, the major part because of export this year, you know, goes very strong, and mainly because on the electric and electronic parts and ICT parts. This year, we export the growth rate of those parts increasing by 17.5%. So that helps because export totally counts about 65% of total GDP. So when our export grows strong, that helps our GDP totally increasing by 2.45% this year. That probably will be the highest of the world this year.
For the first time since 1991, Taiwan is also set to outgrow its giant neighbor China, where the virus first emerged but has now also been largely vanquished. Taiwan's ability to weather the coronavirus has centered on two crucial elements. When the virus first emerged, authorities made economically painful and unpopular shutdown decisions early on. Borders were shut, strict quarantine measures enforced, and carriers traced. As a result, Taiwan had no local infections for 253 straight days from early April. That clean streak was broken Tuesday when a woman tested positive after coming into contact with a foreign pilot, prompting a scramble to contain the new outbreak. But it was because the disease was essentially defeated by the beginning of April that Taiwan's high-tech economy was in a unique position to roar back. We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at VOAnews.com. The U.S. Congress passes a landmark bill in support of Tibet. Indonesia inaugurates newly appointed ministers and vice ministers following the arrest of two members on corruption charges and the firing of others. Malaysia launches a 10-year tourism plan after $25 billion in losses in 2020. Rules to stop a coronavirus variant stoke chaos at Indian airports. And a Pakistani human rights activist is found dead in Canada. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday blasted the bipartisan $900 billion pandemic relief package passed by Congress and suggested he might not sign it.
The bill they are now planning to send back to my desk is much different than anticipated. It really is a disgrace.
Trump complained in a video that he tweeted out Tuesday night that the bill delivered too much money to foreign countries, but not enough to Americans.
The $900 billion package provides hardworking taxpayers with only $600 each in relief payments. And not enough money is given to small businesses, and in particular restaurants, whose owners have suffered so grievously. I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me, and we will get it done.
Democrats had pushed for larger payments as part of a much larger coronavirus relief package, including a $3 trillion version the House passed in May and one totaling $2 trillion it approved in October. But neither advanced the Senate, as Republicans opposed that level of spending and pushed for a more focused relief effort. Happening now in Asia, South Korea said it scrambled fighter jets in response to an intrusion into its air defense identification zone by 19 Russian and Chinese military aircraft Tuesday. China says the mission was part of an annual cooperation plan between China and Russia and not aimed at any third party. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Australian authorities say coronavirus restrictions will be eased slightly for 3 days over the Christmas holiday as a cluster of infections continues to grow in Sydney. Australia has recorded 28,200 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. 908 people have died. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
The cluster of coronavirus infections in Sydney, the state capital of New South Wales, has grown to 97 cases, according to health officials. 8 new cases were reported Thursday. The outbreak has prompted authorities to impose a patchwork of COVID-19 restrictions across Australia's biggest city. Parts of Sydney's Northern Beaches region, which is linked to a group of infections, remain in lockdown. But small gatherings will be allowed for 3 days over Christmas. Larger household gatherings of up to 10 people, excluding children, will be permitted in other districts of the city. The source of the Sydney cluster of infections isn't yet known. Tens of thousands of tests have been carried out, and anyone returning a positive result or who's been in close contact with an infected person must go into isolation at home. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
Over the next few days, there will be modest changes to restrictions over the Christmas period. We appreciate what a difficult time this is for everybody across the state. In particular, our thoughts are with those who are already in isolation, because as we know, when you're in isolation, you can't have contact with anybody for 14 days, depending on when you started that isolation. So our thoughts are with those people who'll be in isolation over the Christmas period.
There have been almost no locally transmitted COVID-19 infections reported elsewhere in Australia in recent days. But the outbreak in Sydney has the nation on edge. All Australian states and territories have imposed travel bans on residents from Sydney. Police checkpoints have been put in place on the border of New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. Many flights have also been suspended. Australia's coronavirus strategy has relied on mass testing, sophisticated contact tracing, strict lockdowns, and the closure in March of its international borders to foreign travellers. Australian citizens and permanent residents are allowed home, but face mandatory hotel quarantine when they arrive. Australians seeking to travel overseas during the pandemic need government approval to travel. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The South Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency said Wednesday that the country reported 1,092 new coronavirus cases as of Tuesday midnight, the second highest since the start of the pandemic. Edward Baran reports.
The South Korean government faces growing public pressure over its COVID-19 vaccine procurement plans. It comes as the country struggled to contain a third wave of the pandemic, reporting its second highest daily tally of cases. Domestic media has lambasted the government's approach to securing newly developed COVID-19 vaccines as too relaxed and overly reliant on locally produced shots, which will take more time than overseas options. According to one poll, 6 in 10 South Koreans believe urgency should be prioritised over safety when it comes to COVID-19 vaccines, and that inoculation should begin as soon as possible. South Korea had 1,092 new coronavirus cases on Tuesday, bringing the national tally to 52,550. Health authorities have expressed concern over public perceptions that view the vaccination program as a global competition, emphasizing instead the need to confirm the safety of the shots. Meanwhile, the first batch of COVID-19 vaccines for US military personnel stationed in the country will arrive as early as Thursday, a source familiar with the plan told Reuters.
That was Edward Baran.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. As Singapore prepares to roll out COVID-19 vaccinations, its striking success in controlling the virus is making some question whether they should take the vaccine, fearing potential side effects. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Top European Union officials say the bloc must invest more heavily in Mediterranean countries to be able to compete with China. More in this report by Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, narrated by Henry Ridgewell.
Barcelona's port used to be owned by Spanish companies, but giant international companies have moved in. Part of this facility is now owned by Hutchison Ports, a Chinese company that operates a new semi-automated terminal. Catalina Grimol is a representative from the port of Barcelona. In the last 25 years, she says, many companies have been acquired by international companies, either Chinese-owned or Turkish, Russian or American. 25 years ago, the European Union helped set up the Union for the Mediterranean to boost its economic and political ties across the Mediterranean region. But the group, made up of 42 member states, is struggling against foreign competition, says the EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell.
I have to say that the situation in our southern neighbourhood has in some aspects worsened. We haven't achieved some of our objectives, and challenges have been growing faster than our collective response to it.
Borrell says trade with North African countries has the potential to be four times greater than it is today, but a lack of coordination among member states has created an opening for powers like China and Russia to expand their influence across North Africa and Southern Europe. Again, Josep Borrell.
We must admit that we don't have enough resources coming from the national budgets. We need absolutely to develop private investment.
Beijing's multi-billion-dollar Belt and Road Initiative to connect Asia, Africa and Europe has seen China establish shipping lines in the Mediterranean alongside submarine cables and 5G mobile networks. The digital infrastructure will shape the competition for 21st century technological dominance, and the EU will need greater financial firepower to compete, says analyst Eduard Martin Lineros.
In the case of Europe, we need the collaboration between private and public sector to get this investment, because if not, it will be very difficult to make a big deployment around the Europe.
China now has stakes in over a dozen European ports. Chinese investment has modernized facilities, but also triggered debate over Europe's ability to influence strategic interests in its own backyard. For Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
A Hong Kong court granted $1.3 million bail on Wednesday to media tycoon Jimmy Lai, the highest-profile pro-democracy activist charged under that city's new national security law on suspicion of colluding with foreign forces. Mia Womersley reports.
Media tycoon Jimmy Lai was granted a $1.3 million bail on Wednesday by a Hong Kong court. He's the highest-profile pro-democracy activist to have been charged under the city's new national security law on suspicion of colluding with foreign forces. An immediate appeal by the prosecution was denied by the city's High Court. Lai is one of the financial hub's most ardent critics of Beijing. His next media group is considered one of the key remaining bastions of media freedom. The 73-year-old was arrested in August when about 200 police officers raided the newsroom of his Apple Daily tabloid. In custody since the 3rd of December, Lai is also charged with fraud related to the lease of a building that houses the newspaper. The security law punishes what Beijing broadly defines as secession, subversion, terrorism and collusion with foreign forces with up to life in jail. It has been condemned by the West and human rights groups as a tool to crush dissent in a semi-autonomous Chinese-ruled city, which has seen months of sometimes violent anti-government protests. Under the new law, the onus is on the defendant to prove they would not be a national security threat if released on bail, rather than on the prosecution to prove its case. While on bail, Lai will not be allowed to meet foreign officials, give interviews, publish any articles, or post on social media. He'll also have to remain at home and surrender his travel documents.
That was correspondent Mia Womersley. As most of the United States, along with much of the Western world, celebrates Christmas with family get-togethers and gift-giving, many of the Jewish faith follow a different path. They head to the nearest Chinese restaurant. Why is this, you might ask, and how did it come about? Joining us is someone who knows the answer. Rabbi Joshua Plaut is the author of a book called A Kosher Christmas, 'Tis the Season to Be Jewish, and the rabbi joins us from New York City. Rabbi, how did this Jewish tradition come about?
Well, it goes back to 1899, when Jews in New York City living on the Lower East Side lived in close proximity to Chinese immigrants and the next generation and their descendants. And it's mentioned in 1899 in a publication called the American Hebrew Weekly, which actually criticized Jews for eating at non-kosher restaurants with meat, mixed meat and milk and served pork products. But it singled out in particular Jews who flock to Chinese restaurants. So we know in 1899, American Jews in New York were eating at Chinese restaurants. So that continued until the present day, but the first mention of eating Chinese food on Christmas by Jews dates to at least 1935. That long ago, in 1935, the New York Times, that Bible of knowledge and information worldwide, reported a certain restaurant owner named Eng Shi Chuck, who brought chow mein on Christmas Day to the Jewish Children's Home in Newark, New Jersey. And we know that, so for at least the last 90 years, American Jews who are with their families and friends gather on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day at Chinese restaurants across the United States. I call it a new Jewish secular tradition. It's really a sacred time. And when the Jew enters the restaurant on Christmas Eve, they are announcing their Jewish identity, and it's a place where it's also made and reinforced.
This obviously started in New York City and the surrounding areas around New York City. How did it spread so much?
People don't like to be outsiders on a national holiday, which is what Christmas is in the United States. So in searching out Chinese restaurants to dine in, Jews in a way were going to a place, whether it's Chinatown or just a single restaurant that offers Chinese food, where Christmas isn't celebrated, because the bulk of the Chinese people are Buddhist, do not observe Christmas, and so eating in a Chinese restaurant is a safe environment. It's a temporary refuge and a haven from the outside world to Christmas, in which you can gather with friends and family who are Jewish and make it a reunion of sorts, a time to be together. So across the United States, from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco to Houston, Texas, if you're Jewish on Christmas and want a place to go and celebrate in a secular way, in your own Jewish way, you go to a Chinese restaurant in whatever city or town you live in. And here's the beauty of all of this. This is not just me surmising as a rabbi what Jews do. We actually have proof now, not from the Bible, but from Google, that in Google's 2018 search data for Chinese cuisine and Jewish culture in the United States got a 48,000% increase, and it peaks with searches on Google for Jews and Chinese food on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. That is that Jews are looking for Chinese restaurants to go and dine, and Google actually has the data to back it up now.
I would take it that the coronavirus has changed things quite a bit over the past year.
Listen, we all, part of being Jewish is having the reflex to survive the ups and downs of life and of what history throws at us. And so there's always the beauty of takeout for Chinese food. I think that takeout Chinese food was among the first forms of takeout and home delivery. So the Chinese restaurants were ahead of the curve and well situated to serve its cuisine during a pandemic to people who have to quarantine in their home to stay safe and healthy. So you can still have Chinese food in your home and celebrate this tradition in a new environment and still with your loved ones and still doing something that's a sacred Jewish secular ritual on Christmas Eve.
Do you anything you care to add we haven't covered?
There's been a historic affinity between Jews and Chinese people, and there has never been a history of anti-Semitism in China. And so it's the perfect place for people to feel like they're in a welcoming environment.
Rabbi Joshua Plaut, author of the book, A Kosher Christmas, 'Tis the Season to be Jewish. This is VOA Asia. COVID-19 has forced Americans to find creative ways to safely celebrate Christmas. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias shows us how the holiday spirit is very much alive this year.
Michael Baker, a former television producer, couldn't let COVID-19 stop the seasonal tale, A Christmas Carol, from going on stage this year. He found a way to have only two actors perform live at a time while interacting with animated projections of the rest of the cast.
All these sets are animated sets, and they've all been integrated in the editing system. Think about all the lumber costs we save with this show.
As for the audience, only 46 persons per show are allowed in the Little Theater of Alexandria, Virginia, and they must wear masks. There can't be Christmas without carols and festive music, but musicians and those who organize their performances have had to adapt to performing outdoors. In the past 6 months, 1,500 people have attended 40 classical music concerts at this venue with strict social distancing protocols. While Robert Reardon says he misses performing indoors with the National Symphony Orchestra, he appreciates the efforts to keep everyone safe.
You can feel who you're sharing that experience with. Even if you're 6 feet apart or 15 feet apart, and there are venues that have really found a way to do this in a very safe, efficient way that really makes the experience enjoyable.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day and holidays ahead.